Welcome, guys. Welcome to the first ever Mutant Year Zero, the Year Zero Roundtable. I fucked it up. I'm sorry.
Oh, this is great.
Yeah, great start.
How many seconds into this are we?
We decided to try and keep it non-explicit, and I messed it up.
In the first 20 seconds.
Yeah.
Oops.
Yeah.
Okay, great stuff, so yeah. Explicit warning, I guess.
Can we edit that out some way?
Well, hopefully there are no children on live.
So welcome to the first ever Year Zero Roundtable. I'm Andreas Lundström. I'm the GM for Sweden Rolls. And I'm a GM and a composer and an RPG fan. And with me today, I have...
You've got to tell which of us is going to talk first.
You go. Well, go ahead, Matthew.
Okay, I'm Matthew. I'm one half of the Effect podcast with my co-host Dave. And we've been playing role-playing games since I was at school. And that was a very long time ago.
And I'm Matt. I am also one half of a podcast, though I'm not meant to be officially representing the podcast here today. So, yes, we won't talk about that podcast. I'm known as Nine Little Bees all over the social media landscape. And I've been playing role-playing games since 1995. I suspect a little bit
baby
later than the two of you.
The same. Yeah.
Okay. And I'm doing podcasting as well as I've started doing game design stuff. So... yeah, done a lot of tinkering with the Free League games. In fact, my favorite system, which is why we're all here.
Yes, exactly. We're all here because our podcasts are more or less dedicated to Free League games in different degrees. Can we say that without stepping on any toes there, Matt? Yeah, ish?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
Not really, I try and do it as much as possible.
Free League games have occurred in our respective podcasts. Yeah.
Yes.
And us three as people and players and GMs are huge fans of the game. Right.
Yeah, I mean, the only reason our podcast exists is because of Coriolis. Not the first Free League game to come out in English, but the first one I bought, Dave bought Mutant Year Zero. And so we're all about Free League. We did... divert a little bit to Simba Room, and we felt very guilty about that because, you know, we like shilling for Free League, but then Simba Room did the right thing, or Team Yumringen did the right thing and merged with Free League to save us our blushes.
Yeah, probably because of the effects, bringing Simba Room into the fold of it.
Yeah.
Okay, we are sitting here and we're super happy to do this, but a little bit of, at least me, I'm guessing kind of you guys as well, it's a bit sad because we just got the news like an hour ago that Christopher Tolkien, the son of J.R.R. Tolkien, writer of Lord of the Rings, The Hobbit, Silmarillion, passed away today or maybe yesterday at the ripe age of 95. And... all Tolkien fans owe almost as big a debt of gratitude to him as we do to the great professor himself, because he was responsible of editing the Silmarillion and the Unfinished Tales and, the History of Middle-earth, all of that. So
we should raise a glass.
Yeah, let's raise a glass to Christopher Tolkien. But at least he won't have to live through watching the Amazon Prime series, and that's something.
Yeah, silver lining, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Matt, do you want to run us through this caveats? What's caveats?
Caveats.
Yes. So we're looking at a Trello outline of the stuff we want to talk about. Caveats.
Caveats. I wonder who's the Swede in this gang.
So the caveats are just basically at the start of an episode is what we would usually do with our Trello outline. Is if there's anything that we need to get out of the way. For example, if we're reviewing a book that was sent to us as a freebie, then we would say, okay, just as a caveat, this book we received for free, but we're still going to give an honest review of it, blah, 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 blah. So the caveats we had, I'll go through them since I'm talking about them anyway. Swearing, which we've which we can just throw out the window. We were going to say we're going to try and keep this clean and, you know, rated G, but our, you know,
does this mean that I can drop as many F-bombs seconds if I want to?
we're still going to try and keep it clean. So
let's.
I'm not sure how we'll see about if I can edit out the F-bomb with like a big censor sticker or something afterwards.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, the other thing to mention is to do with the stream quality. So if any of you notice that the stream is dropping off or the quality is not great, first of all, apologies. I'm doing all the streaming stuff in the background. I live in rural Germany and I don't have a great internet connection, but it seems to be working. So apologies if it is a little bit patchy at times. Apologies if my internet drops out, and we'll get up and running as soon as that again, if that happens. But just to make you aware, please stand by if we haven't closed the show. And if we can't get it back online for some reason, then we'll mention that in chat, and we'll record ourselves just on audio and release it as a podcast somewhere later. So this is our first time live streaming, I think, my first time running a live stream. I don't think I've been in a live stream. Matthew, you've been in a live stream, haven't you?
Yeah, but I've been a pure victim of Doug at Victory Condition Gaming there. He runs it all. I'm not doing anything with that. I just turn up on the time, or maybe 5 or 10 minutes after the time we started in the case of the last time that we were here. So, this is all new to us. And I've got to say, Dave is on an alien Discord. And a lot of people there are saying, oh, why don't you guys in effect live stream? And obviously Dave is too ugly, which is why I'm doing this. But we're going to have to learn about this, I think. And maybe we'll do some of our own as well.
Yeah. I'm a live stream virgin completely. I'm a tech idiot as well. So I'm so happy that Matt, and I want to give it like kudos to you, Matt, for setting up the graphics and setting up this whole thing. It's I'm not sure if this would be possible even if it weren't for you, you know, like. So it's really, thank you for that.
Oh, I nearly forgot the ambient background music that you created especially should be coming in right about now. We can't hear it, unfortunately. So if there's some ambient, hopefully there's some ambient running quietly in the background right now. If it's too loud, please say something. If it's too quiet, please say something, and we'll adjust as needed. Yeah. So anyway.
We try to have a short jingle with a bit more like energy to it in the beginning as well, but that's something we'll have to add in the podcast versions or something.
We thought maybe swearing as an intro would be better.
Yeah.
Dave, by the way, isn't on the YouTube chat, but he has just messaged me. I don't think he likes to be calling him ugly, so he's not that ugly at all.
Caveats out of the way.
Good caveats. Cool. great. And you guys watching, chat away and comment and all that, and we have promised that we will save some time in the end for live streaming questions if you have one or two. We have some prepared from earlier, but we would like some to give you guys some kind of reward for watching live as well. So maybe we should
One quick thing, I guess, housekeeping-wise, we're planning on this being roughly somewhere between 1 and 1.5 hours long.
But you don't have to listen for all that time.
You don't, of course. And we will be we'll be actually publishing this as a standard YouTube video after the live event. I'm recording it right now. That'll go up. If it doesn't, I don't know how YouTube Live works exactly. It's my first time using it. If it doesn't go up automatically, then I'll have a video file which I can upload afterwards. So that'll all be handled. That'll all happen. If you have to jump away or anything, don't worry, you won't miss it. Hour to an hour and a half. We'll try and stick to that. I know Matthew's already said that if I'm in charge of the time, because my podcast, which shall remain unnamed, tends to go significantly over an hour and a half. I'm keeping an eye on it. So
So we're sticking to an hour and a half.
We'll stick to that.
We'll try.
Cool.
Yeah, so Are we satisfied with the introductions? Should we like mention some more?
In fact, in chat, Phil has just said, my missus wants to know why it has not started yet.
Yeah.
So okay. I guess we need to get started, right?
Get on with it. Should we start with a real hot topic, like which Free League game is our favorite?
Sure. Yes, we shall.
Because that's really that's.
And if people go to our website, if they go to our Facebook page, they'll see which is our favorite. Which is my favorite? My favorite is Coriolis.
And why is that?
I love Coriolis. And we were the Coriolis effect before Free League brought out too many games that weren't Coriolis for us to cover. But our other favorite, I must admit, about a year ago, Free League were very mysterious with us, and they said, we've got some news, and we'd like to do a thing with you, but you have to sign an NDA first. And so we signed our NDA, and then Dave and I sat there wondering what it was. We guessed it must be somebody else's property if their NDAs were in the running. And when I got the email and saw it was Alien, I knew Dave would be jumping up and down, because I think there are two things he would have hoped for. One was Alien, one was The Thing, and it was Alien. So Alien might be Dave's favourite game, I have to say. I'm going to make him play Coriolis, but Alien, I think, might be his favourite of the Free League library.
And why Coriolis for you? Like,
well, that's really interesting, because Dave again. So Dave had been playing Mutant Year Zero. He buys just about every post-apocalyptic game that comes out, and I didn't play it with him because we're old school friends. We get together occasionally, but this was one he was running with a home group, and he really liked that. And then when they kickstarted Coriolis, he urged me to buy it at his wedding. It was more important to him than his wife that I should buy the game. And
you're going to get another text now.
Hopefully she's not watching.
Dave has sent me another text now, and he just wants to say that, of course, we co-wrote the Hope's Last Day adventure in the Alien book, which is obviously why, really, it's both of our favourites. And he did the Xenomorphs as well. He set it up, the Xenomorphs, and did all their attacks. So he feels, I think, part ownership of that game. But for Coriolis, what got me, first of all, I was very sceptical about reading this new system. And I sat there going, I'm not sure I'm going to enjoy this. But enjoy it I did. And there were some key things. The combat system and the use of extra successes to do stunts, I recognised it just on reading it. It would be really quick, and yet it would be quite descriptive and narrative, and you'd be able to, you know, not just hitting somebody until their hit points go down. So that was a big thing for me. But the culture as well, and I hadn't particularly... I'm a big Firefly fan, and it says Arabian Nights and Firefly. But I didn't really pick up on the Firefly, but... that culture, and particularly, and Matt, we were having a discussion about this on Facebook earlier today, prayer, this was a big thing for me. So for those of you out there in the world who don't play Coriolis, the push mechanic in Coriolis is prayer, and you pray to the gods when you want to be sure of success. You can also, before you're having, say, a fight, go to the chapel and pray. And there's a cost for the actual act of prayer. It's one darkness point. But if you do preparatory prayer, there's also a benefit in that you get one, or if you do it in a chapel, two extra dice on the pushed reroll. And so I love that system because, as I was explaining to you, Matt, we've played Pendragon for 30 years. Never once have our players been to church, and we're meant to be pious knights. In this game... you know, as soon as any scent of the doo-doo hitting the fan, then these guys will go to a chapel. They'll seek out a chapel and make sure they're praying either to the dancer if it's going to be fisticuffs, or to the judge if it's going to be shooting. And it's great. Just the fact that we actually have real religion, gods that can actually change the world, that answer your prayers, is fabulous. So I think those are the real reasons why I love Coriolis.
You want to go next, Matt?
Sure. Coriolis for me as well, actually. For different reasons. When I was a teenager, my family moved to Pakistan, and I lived there for 4 years. So my like late teenage years were living in this, Muslim country with Arabic script and everything. I learned two languages out there, immersed myself into the culture, and that was a big part of my childhood. So Coriolis instantly hit me right in my kind of nostalgia sweet spot. And for me, that everything else about it, I love the changes made to Mutant Year Zero in terms of mechanics. I like that it was one, although I like the Mutant Year Zero dice mechanic with having three different pools. I like that Coriolis was just one pool of dice. I really liked how the darkness points worked. I liked the prayer mechanic behind pushing. The discussion we were having before was about the preparing prayer in advance, which when I ran my campaign, I never reminded my players that was a thing they could do. Because to me, it feels a little bit like they're kind of gaming the system. And I was happy enough with the praying being part of the push mechanic. But anyway, so many things about the game I really liked. Very, very rich setting, of course. I love how sandboxy it was, yet at the same time had all this really rich setting material. My first game, role-playing game I ever played was West End Games' Star Wars back in the 90s. Mm. So for me, like sci-fi role-playing was how I got into role-playing. I didn't get into a D&D or anything like that. So the fact that it was sci-fi for me also is like a big draw. I'm a big sci-fi and fantasy nerd, but I don't know. Coriolis just ticked all the right boxes for me. So yeah. However, Vasen, or however you pronounce it in Swedish, I'm pronouncing it with a... Vasen, okay. I'm pronouncing it like I see it in German, but...
Yeah.
Vasen, yeah. Vasen is probably going to be my favorite. Mechanically, certainly, it takes... Like, one of the things I've been working on in my own project is Year Zero Mini, which is taking Tales from the Loop, the core mechanic there, and kind of giving it a little bit of a tweak. And a lot of the stuff that we're seeing in Vasen is basically very similar to what I'm doing. And in fact, I haven't released my 1.0 version of Year Zero Mini yet. And I'm finding that I'm making tweaks based on Vasen to... Vasen, is that right? God, in my head, it's Vasen. No, I'm going to say Vasen.
Vasen is better than Vasen, yeah.
I'm basically making tweaks to kind of make it more or less aligned with it. So I, like, mechanically, I think it's going to be my favorite game. I haven't run it or played it yet, so that's why I'm kind of caveating that slightly. I also really, really like the aspect of it being this sort of mythical past. My other big project is Nord Saga, which is a Forbidden Lands alternate setting based on what if the Vikings received supernatural help and overthrew the Christians back in the 10th century. So for me, like, if I am ever creating my own settings, they're always in our own world. They're always alternate history or mythological settings. So Vasen basically takes that box for me. I love the Victorian angle. I love that it's set in Scandinavia. And I love the monster hunting elements of it as well. Although it's not, and I love the fact that it's not, you're not meant to kill the monsters. You're meant to find out what their weaknesses are. It's just everything about it is perfect in my head. So on paper. So, and they even did things like they've taken, like, Tales from the Loop is player facing. That means, you know, the GM never rolls dice. Vasen isn't, but it's got combat tacked on, which is similar to the combat we've seen in other Year Zero games. I don't know. So for me, currently, Coriolis is in my number one spot, and Vasen will potentially knock it slightly off that pedestal. Yeah. And I love all the other games I've run, and I've played every other game that that has been made by Free League, other than Simbrew. Oh, I actually have played Simbrew once. Although we're not mentioning that anymore.
We can mention Simbrew.
We can mention it. So yeah, I've had experience with all the games and
published in English.
Published in English.
Oh
yeah.
Yes.
Not Svelvinter or however it's pronounced. I've read the quick start. Looks good.
Yeah. There's also the game of Morwale as well, which was one of the first ones.
Okay.
Yeah.
And there's a mutant Hindenburg, isn't there?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
We're not going to see that one in something like Octoberland or something.
Oh yeah, the October Gorgeous. Land as well. Yeah, exactly.
Gorgeous design on that one. Mm. I'd really love to see that in English, but Thomas has said no, never. So that's not going to happen.
Okay. And I thought that this was going to be a real hot potato, like choosing the favorite Free League game. But my answer is also Coriolis.
Oh, yay!
Which is basically, out of the games published in English, it was the one I played or GM'd last, actually. But it was one that was always there, and I didn't have a group for it. And I was so into the setting. I loved the feeling of the game. And I also loved that the push mechanic of the Year Zero engine, I think, works at its best because the darkness points is really, as a GM, you can do so much fun with the darkness points. And it's, I really, really like that. And as you said, Matt, the rich setting with all the factions, and the history, it's really, yeah, it's unfortunately, I have to say now, my favorite as well. But I'm also really...
Unfortunately?
No, since you guys... all say because
he wants to pick a different one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, well, tell you what, let me play Devil's Advocate.
I mean, of course, the Forbidden Lands is the game that my podcast is really dedicated to. I really love that game. I love the setting that Erik Granström has created. It's really fun. I love his take on the goblins and the halflings and like the history with the orcs and elves and dwarves. It's I really like that as well. But okay, let me say one thing that I dislike about the Coriolis rules then.
Yeah.
Which is actually that in all, I think, or most other games that you... I mean, the fact that if you have strength 5 and you go down to strength 2, then you only have 2 dice to roll.
Yeah.
That's really a huge advantage against other games where you still wield your sword with the same vigor, even if you're down to 1 hit point out of 89 in D&D.
Yeah.
But here, you still have the same dice pool.
Sure.
Yeah, it's not quite in all the games. So in a lot of the games, as you take damage, you are less effective. But in Alien, that's not the case, though it's based on your strength stat.
I think with Coriolis,
that's not the thing that I dislike about it the most, though. Matt.
The thing with Coriolis and the hit point thing, which at first I also wasn't that thrilled about, is that it has those. You can get a critical on any
yes.
attack,
and
that kind of balances out. Whereas all the other ones, obviously, you only get a critical when you're broken. And that makes Coriolis actually really exciting in combat because you're constantly going to be getting, like, every time you roll those dice, if you get enough successes, then you're potentially going to get a critical. And the same thing happens with the enemies. I kind of like how that kind of addresses that little kind of gameplay loop there. That's
absolutely,
yeah, it's hit points. Yeah, it feels familiar to a lot of people, which is also a bit of a draw. It's not quite as dynamic, sure, as Mutant Year Zero, Forbidden Lands, or even Tales from the Loop and Vazen, where you have conditions which reduce your dice pool. But those criticals are a real danger, and they're very exciting, I think.
So that's not. If we let's diss Coriolis for a little while, though, because there are a few things that I have problems with. Yeah. Not strangely, the hit points thing, I can live with that. It adds a bit of pulpiness to it, a little bit of invulnerability. But as you say, Matt, you've also got those deadly criticals at any moment. So that's not a problem for me. But there's one thing, we've got more skills in Coriolis, and they're not evenly distributed among the stats. So in Coriolis, you want to front load your wits because then you're going to be better at more things. So that's a little bit of a problem for me. It's not a game breaker, but I wonder whether it's a symptom of Coriolis being the first adaptation of Year Zero. And maybe with practice, have they become more disciplined in thinking about how they do it?
I kind of feel the opposite. I kind of hope that more games would have wouldn't be kind of what's the right term here? Married to the idea of a certain number of even number of skills to the attributes because I'm like my podcast started with Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay. That was our big starting point, and that, like any kind of D100 based system, just has a massive list of skills, and they kind of, to me, that I like that. I like that there's the right number of skills for the game, and the skill list has been carefully thought through, that anything you might need to do in the game has been there. And some of the Year Zero games, mainly I've noticed this mostly with Forbidden Lands, feels like it's quite noticeable that some of the, mainly because I also played it during beta, or ran it during beta, and we saw a little bit of changes with how the skills were being kind of distributed. It felt some of the decisions with like how heal is attached to empathy, etc., just kind of felt like they were there to make the numbers stack up. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that bothers me more than having an uneven distribution of skills.
I was going to say exactly the same, actually, that like squeezing skills into attributes just to have a balance gives less pleasure for me when I play the game. And it's the same with my all-time favorite RPG game of all genres, all kinds, is The One Ring. And they also have this, that every skill belongs to an attribute in this like way. And then also, like, experience-wise, you have, they're grouped in this way as well.
Yeah, and the skill groupings.
Yeah, it feels a bit squeezed into there. And some of the skills are like, So I would rather prefer an uneven amount of skills or of course... So that's
what about the number of skills? Because Coriolis has got 16, all the rest have 12, which makes your skill base, each skill is quite broad.
I like big lists of skills. I would have liked Forbidden Lands to have had 16, because I think they could have probably made it line up a little bit better in my opinion. They would have had, it would have felt a little bit contrived potentially with trying to squeeze like another strength based skill in there. Wits always is going to have more because it's knowledge based and I don't know. For me, some of the stuff I've been my own kind of hacks of the Year Zero engine. I think when you play around with the names of the attributes, it like with bearing in mind like trying to line up an even number of skills, it makes it a little bit easier. For example, one of the ones that I did in playtesting had replaced strength and agility with fitness and dexterity. So fitness was your strength, your speed. Like, it was also Victorian, so it wasn't such like fantasy, that sort of thing. It's more like, what's your general fitness like? And that could encompass things that would potentially normally be covered by an agility type of role, like move, for example. Yeah. Move would fall under fitness. And dexterity is your hand-eye coordination, and that would cover things like if you're trying to do like mechanical type of repairs, or you're trying to do some thievery type things, if you're trying to use ballistics, so like trying to aim up a shot, that sort of thing. And that seemed a lot better, because for me the strength and the agility things always is where it started falling down, because wits, it was always, you always had too many skills to put into wits. And how do you break them up? How do you swallow them up into a small number, and how do you kind of parcel the ones you absolutely have to have but you can't, like heal, for example? Where do you put that? We'll put it with empathy. We'll come up with a reason for why it fits there, because it's a better fit there than any of these other skills. So I kind of would like to see Free League in future break free of the strength, agility, wits, empathy pattern.
Yes, I mean they have. They do in things like
they have started with like Vaisen, for example, has done that, hasn't it? And I don't know if that's because Vaisen is based on Tales from the Loop, which also breaks that pattern.
Yeah.
And whether we'll see that in future products, whether they're going to go back to strength, agility, wits, empathy. But I think it, by just kind of shaking that the attribute names up a little bit, it gives you a little bit more freedom to kind of get that balance a little bit better.
Yeah. Definitely. We've Dave and I are working on a Western game, a non-Weird West Western game, where it's people versus people, and instead of strength, and we've got grit, and instead of we're having a bit of an argument, Dave and I, about whether it should be called dexterity or not. I want to call it dexterity, so I agree with you, Matt. Quickness or something like that, and again, looking at manual dexterity really rather than physical dexterity.
We've already gone for half an hour and we're all on the first question.
Right,
so
we're saving questions for episode two, aren't we?
I'm suggesting that we we table this and we get back to like tweaking systems of our own to a future roundtable.
In a future cast, yeah. Yeah.
What about that? Yeah.
Sounds good.
Our respective GM styles and along, is that something we can talk briefly about? Would that be interesting for folks to hear?
Can we talk briefly, you're asking?
We can try briefly, I guess.
Yeah.
Why don't you kick us off?
We've got 90 seconds. You got 90 seconds each.
Show us how it's done.
I can start. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wish I was a big prepper. I'm not. I'm a big improviser. I don't prep a lot, except for the podcast. I prep quite a bit. And usually, because of the podcast, Andreas GM is very different from the home game Andreas GM, because my home game style is very low prep, very sandboxy, while the podcast GM is very railroady, very high prep. So I try, and I think that the more you try to differentiate your GM style, you'll get better at everything about GMing. I think I also put a lot of effort into trying to make the NPCs be credible, like a credible character. It could be a character that's very far out there, that's very extreme, but still like a character that not all the NPCs are the same. I try to do voices, I try to do quirks, I try to do stuff like I did an NPC in the Bitter Reach where a peddler was giggling all the time. Just like little details like that. Time. How did I do?
I think you did okay.
What was I? Was I within the limit?
I wasn't counting. Yeah. Sure.
You didn't set the timer. There you go. All you right. Said, Matt, that you'd be in charge of the time. But this is why the podcast that shall be unnamed goes on and on and on.
If you're not careful, I'm going to time you right now.
Okay, then. Tommy, I am solo. So there's a big difference between our actual plays and Andreas in that we're not doing our actual plays for entertainment. We're simply recording our home games. So you get the same me when I'm GMing an actual play as you do when I'm at home, because it is the home game. And it is very low prep. I think the GM is as much of a player as all the players, so I like them to be reactive. I paint my NPCs with some motivations. I put some details in places. I make the rest up on the fly. I'm done. Matt, oof. Beat that.
Wow.
That was impressive.
I am a traditionally high prep junkie who is trying to be as improv as possible.
Yeah, you beat
we
that.
Do a lot of I'll expand a bit just so I'm not the shortest one. I don't want to ruin my reputation of being a windbag. we've done quite a few GMing discussions and camp, like how to do sandbox sort of stuff on my podcast. But for me, breaking free from pre-published adventures and discovering the joy of sandbox low prep GMing has been a life changer in how I GM. I still do prep up front, but all my prep is at the beginning of a campaign, setting up things like factions and locations and NPCs, those sorts of things. So making the world kind of a living place so that when my players do whatever the hell they want to do, slight swearing there. they basically can kind of go wherever they want. They can do whatever they do, and I can just improv and go with it. And it's been really easy to do. And it really has just been amazing because I don't have the stress of, have I prepped enough? Has the stuff that I've prepped, is it not going to be used? That this never comes into play. So
sounds like Forbidden Lands would like help you really help you with that.
In fact,
a lot,
Mutant Year Zero is really redefined how I GM'd. When I bought that game and I ran it for the first time, I was blown away because it gave you, like, it was written to give you the, like, advice and the tools you needed to run a proper sandbox. And Forbidden Lands, of course, is exactly the same, just more refined. And that was life changer for me. And from there, I started looking at other kind of GMing books that would, or, you know, blog articles, that sort of stuff, looking for more advice on how to do this with other games. And yeah, and that's one of the big draws for the Year Zero games generally, is that they are sandboxy. Coriolis, the second one that came out, of course, is a massive sandbox. Tales from Loop, the third one. Like, you could set it wherever you wanted. It also was like there's mysteries happening, but there it's kind of sandboxy as well. So it's kind of it was interesting to see how mysteries were brought into the sandbox, and then of course we had got Forbidden Lands after that, which is also a huge sandbox. So that's me. I'll stop.
Right.
Well over 90 seconds.
Well, all a man has is his reputation. Yes. Okay, I think we've actually brushed a little bit on comparing the different rule systems. So maybe we could expand on that on a future episode and do some stuff that we haven't talked about at all. How about that?
We could do, yes.
Right. Is that...
What are you thinking?
No, I'm thinking maybe we could discuss what we would want to see from the Free League in the future.
Hmm. Well, I've got to say, there's one thing that I wanted to see. Which I know is definitely not going to happen because somebody else just got the license.
Oh.
And that is a great series of detective stories by Ben Aronovich, set in London, very much of the place as you read the book, if you know London, like I do. There's one moment I have to recount where our hero and his boss are travelling down a road. And I said to myself, I know exactly where they're going. I know the exact tree they're going to visit, and I know where it is. I work for the National Trust in my day job, and it's one of our trees, actually. So I knew it really well. But they were still on the A40 but when I realised where they were going. And I just love that about the books. And so they're called in English the Rivers of London series, and they're about a magic cop. Or more than one magic cop are dealing with magic crimes. And I really hoped that we could bring that to the Year Zero system. But Ben Aronovich is a huge fan of RuneQuest, and he's just done a deal with Chaosium.
Yep.
All right.
So Matt, what do you want?
I want less licenses. I want more... it feels to me like Free League have their hands tied when it comes to licenses, and there's decisions that have to be made where the license holder is kind of pulling some strings in the background, and they're very, you know, diplomatic about the whole thing, and are always assuring that it's not the case, and there's always a good working relationship and everything. But for me, I really want to see more kind of original stuff. And the thing that I've never played a cyberpunk game, mainly because none of the systems that are out there really like pull at me. But I love cyberpunk fiction. I love cyberpunk films. I just love cyberpunk, and I would love to see a kind of a cyberpunk game done by Free League with the Year Zero engine. And in fact, every time there's a tease about a new system that's going to be announced over on Discord at the Year Zero server, it goes crazy with the amount of people saying, it's got to be cyberpunk this time. It's got to be cyberpunk this time. And it never is. So, like, I would love to see that personally. I kind of have toyed with the idea of kind of making one myself, but you have to put so much attention into the gear for a cyberpunk game, and I just that doesn't interest me so much, the gear side of game design. So I'd have to bring somebody else in to do the gear or something, and it's just like, oh, that's just kind of, I'll let somebody else do it because somebody will do it now that we've got the OGL. Or Free League will do it themselves. Mm. And but there's like people are really calling out for it. I would love to see it. I would be playing that game in an instant. That's what I would love to see in future.
One of the other big Swedish publishers, Helmgast, who recently got very much praise for their Cult Divinity Lost game, just released the latest version of Neotech.
Yeah.
But only in Swedish. So a lot of the people are hoping for an English translation.
I actually, this isn't really Free League, is it? But when I was working on the Free League booth at Spiel Essen here in Germany this year, and one of the evenings we went out and had drinks with the Helmgast guys who are working on Neotech, and I was basically interrogating them about how does your system work? Is it going to come to the is it going to be translated to English? And they want to bring it to English. It's just it's kind of, apparently in Neotech, there's a lot of slang that is kind of really hard to translate. So there's some issues with it not being super easy to translate into English, but it sounds like they're kind of committed to do it, although I can't say that officially, of course. Mm. Yeah, that sounds really cool. Yeah. Because that's also like, that's kind of like more like neo cyberpunk. It's not written from the kind of traditional William Gibson, based in the kind of late 80s, early 90s. What does the future look like? Mm. It's based on right now. Everything is wireless. There are drones everywhere. And it feels like what we would see right now, if someone was to write a cyberpunk novel, which is just based 20 or 30 years in our future, it feels right. It's taking our current technology and setting it forward. Mm. And I really like that. And I would kind of hope if Free League wanted to do something, they might need to differentiate themselves from Helmgast a little bit. So maybe they would
I don't think there's a hindrance with Helmgast releasing Neotech, because I mean we're getting a Call of Cthulhu game. And
everybody's got to call it.
We recently had a Kickstarter for a Swedish translation of the 7th edition Call of Cthulhu, and there's been a huge amount of Swedish horror games. Horror games was the biggest like genre in Swedish RPGs last year, and they're still not finished because obviously I think it was a Kickstarter level.
A stretch goal for the
Call of Cthulhu
RPG.
The art book.
And that was a stretch goal for the art book to like, okay, if we reach this high, we gotta make an RPG out of it. Much as Forbidden Lands was a stretch goal for the Nissa Gullikson art book as well. Yeah. And it's I'm not sure. Yeah, I think we could get a cyberpunk game in the future. But I'm with you, Matt, there on like less IPs and more campaigns. And I think it's a very old truth, but it is a truth that what sells the most, it's always a core box or the core rule book. Everything else that you produce is gonna sell less than that, so you earn you make more money from making new games than you do from selling supplements to games you already have. But I mean, there's got to be a limit somewhere as well. You know, it's gonna be somewhere you're gonna reach a point that okay, we have 38 games. Do we need a 39th, or should we write stuff for the things we have?
So, I, in a way, what I'd really want from Free League in the future.
I know what you want from Free League. I know very well what you want from Free League. You want Mercy of the Icons.
Mercy of the Icons. Yeah, that would be good. And, so it's interesting because we've got the team Janringen have churned out supplements for Simba Room like a sausage machine. Chunk, 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 you know. Every few months, there's a new Kickstarter, there's a new supplement. And these aren't, these aren't trashy. They're good work. They build the story forward. They're, brilliant Martin Grip artwork. And meanwhile, poor old Coriolis languishes there with one expansion. So I'd really like to see more focus on what they've already got rather than new ranges. But you're right. I'd buy all the new ranges. I wouldn't buy, the other stuff, I think.
We can't obviously speculate on business decisions and stuff, but I wonder if they may have got themselves into a position where they kind of, because of like maybe staff sizes and stuff, they kind of need that income from the newer games. I would agree. I think if they can slow the pace down a little. There's Aliens just come out. We just received the Vazen beta like a few weeks ago. I haven't had a chance to look at either Alien or Vazen because there's so much other stuff I'm trying to catch up with. And unless I'm running it soon, there's no, like, it just is going to have to, like, it's kind of being added to my next to read pile.
Yeah. It's amazing because
that kind of tends to happen with most Free League games because they churn out so much stuff so often. Slowing the pace would be kind of nice for me as a consumer. Yeah. Also, the amount of money that I'm spending on their products. Mm. I keep telling my wife, like, it's only going to be one or two this year. Yeah. It's like four or five again.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there, Matt, because I'm the same. And being a father of four, it's hard to get the time to read. I also signed an NDA for the Alien RPG back in February. Of last year, and we were gonna do some kind of AP podcasting or streaming of it or something like that. And I still haven't read it. I haven't opened it. It's embarrassing, but here I am. I mean, I run two podcasts. I have four kids. I have a day job. I have commissions for three soundtracks. It's on a need to know basis. Like, I read what I need to know, nothing more. I read what I really have to run the games. But hopefully,
well, you see, my life has been alien for the last year, pretty much, because we were running it at UK Games Expo and doing a lot of other stuff for it. And actually, it's just made me want to play Coriolis Spore. I'm done with Alien now, personally. Dave isn't. Yeah. Now, obviously, it's definitely Dave, one of Dave's favourite games, and he's running a campaign at home that we ought to talk about on our podcast, actually. But I want to get back to Coriolis, and I want Free League to get back to Coriolis and give me what I want.
Okay.
You've got all the sandbox tools at your fingertips. You don't need the official expansion.
I like the Mercy of the Icons. I like the pictures. I like the books. I like to have them in my hand.
One thing that has always struck me is that you could easily run a cyberpunk game in Coriolis because of the factions. Basically mega corporation factions. Just don't let the players start with a ship. Put them on a planet. Have them in a typical kind of, down on their luck group of anarchists or something who are not happy with the status quo and they need to break free. And eventually, like maybe after four or five sessions, they get a ship and they are able to, then like the normal campaign starts. Mm. But you could really easily do something like that. Like Coriolis, it's the sandbox is incredible. It's absolutely, you can do so much in it.
Mm. If you look at the novel or the novella, not the one that they did as part of the Kickstarter, but the original one that was published under Jan Ringen's Coriolis version. That is, it's full of, it's a crime novel with a proxy ring in it. It is a cyberpunk novel, basically.
Yep.
So,
yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. It feels like, I've read that novel as well, and it felt like, it could be in the same universe as Altered Carbon, for example. Like, very, very, I don't know, there's all of the themes kind of slot in really nicely. Phil's just said in the chat that he's hoping that with Jan Ringen joining Free League and with Free League having purchased the license for Coriolis from Paradox, that it'll get a new lease of life. And I suspect that was a big decision behind them spending the money and buying the license.
Of course, they wouldn't spend the money if they weren't planning on releasing a bunch of stuff.
Sure.
But part two and part three are on the way. We have gotten that confirmed from the guys writing it. So I mean, it's on its way.
Just plug my podcast here. We're interviewing them tomorrow about the future Coriolis. That's so good. This weekend, everybody will know what they've got in their plans.
good. So should we maybe move on to another question? How do we think the Free League games fit the AP podcast format? Is the Mutant Year Zero engine the best or one of the best, or doesn't it really suit the actual play format?
You ought to go with this first. You're our key APGM. Second favorite AP podcast of the recent N-World voting. So tell us, what do you think? And, I have listened actually to your cult APs all the way through, and I haven't yet finished any of your Free League games. So that might say something
interesting. I have no idea what it says about it, but I think it fits well. I think it fits very well because the battles are quite short, and that's a must for me at least. I abhor these like 2 hour long battles of D&D or Pathfinder podcasts. It doesn't tickle me anywhere at all. So for me they work very very well because they're also the worlds are very well built. The settings are great. You have the Forbidden Lands fantasy setting, but there are so many quirks and so many stuff that aren't typical fantasy that it makes it very interesting. So it's not the best. I really prefer Powered by the Apocalypse when it comes to podcasts, at least.
Which is what Cult is.
Yeah, exactly. Cult of the Lost is one. Yeah. And I have a Swedish podcast, Swedish language podcast called Tanning in a Kastad, which is Alia Jakta Est, the Die is Cast in Swedish. And our main campaign now is Monster of the Week, which is a Powered by the Apocalypse game. And actually, a little reward here for you guys listening. I've taken every single monster in that campaign from the Vazen art book. So when I got the news that Vazen was getting turned into an RPG, I was like, wait a second, I have to talk to you, Anegras. I have to talk to you, Anegras, about this because this is amazing. that's my favorite rule system for a podcast because it's so fast and every dice roll you make has a consequence. I know it's been said about the Free League games that it's that way there as well. I haven't been able to implement it really in that way. I've had loads of dice rolls where it's like, oh, you failed, too bad, you'll have to do something else. In Cult or in Monster of the Week, something always happens. Something always happens. As soon as you roll the dice, something happens. And that's really something that's really narratively, it gives me so much narrative as a GM to expand the story and to push the story forward. But I do think that Free League games are coming in good second among the games that I've played thus far. Because they fit the actual play podcast very well. That's my 5 cents.
What about you, Matt?
I'm not sure there is a perfect system. I have to agree with Andreas that the long tactical combat is a terrible fit for the podcast format. It might work on more like a visual actual play where people can see like battle maps and stuff. It turns me off anyway, regardless. So definitely having deadly combat, like deadlier systems or systems that resolve combat in like a single roll or a couple of rolls, naturally always going to be a better fit. Because when you're focusing on the story, it doesn't get bogged down by this weird mini game where, oh, the guns or the knives come out. Now we're gonna stop the narrative while we play this mini game for 2 hours. Mm. Which, of course, is hard for people who aren't involved to listen to. It's often hard for players to listen to when it's not their turn, right? we all know that we've all probably had players who get their phone out when it's not their turn, and then when it's their turn, it's like, oh, sorry, what just happened?
What am I going to do now? Let's see here. What do I have?
Yeah. Because it is hard to stay focused when, you've got this tactical combat. And so for me, it's definitely games that have the more narrative, the faster flowing combat systems. Not that every RPG should be about combat, of course, but when it happens, if that slows the game down, it's usually a kind of a big red flag. We're running a Warhammer 4th edition campaign for our podcast, and I hate it now. I love the game going in. We reviewed the game and we really liked it, and now I'm just like, I would never ever in a million years want to run this game because it's really crunchy. As soon as you get into combat, it is worse than D&D, which is saying a lot because I hate D&D. It's like my most hated game. I see it up on your shelf there, Andreas. You have been judged.
Yeah, so this is just the bragging part. This is the playing part.
Okay. Oh, that's the real side over there. So for me, like the Year Zero games, because they are a little bit on the tactical side for me. They're kind of right on the border of being too tactical. Depending on your players, but they're saved by the fact that all of the games that Free League make with this system are very gritty. So combat gets resolved very quickly, but you still have the traditional like turns and you're rolling initiative and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I wouldn't say I would agree that the more narrative ones like Powered by the Apocalypse or maybe Fate, things like that have a much bigger focus on the narrative aspect of role playing are probably better suited for a podcast actual play. Mm. But yeah. But I mean, still hands down, I love the Free League games. They're my favorite games, and I would always, if I'm running something, it's always high on my list, top of my list usually. So yeah.
Mm?
Matthew, right. Over to you.
Right. So I've got to lay my cards on the table here. You may have picked up from stuff I've said already that I'm not a massive fan of actual play. And a lot of what you say about combat, even short combat from a number of systems, it's not great listening. I kind of apologize every time. We've done, actually some of our most successful podcasts have been combat heavy games like Alien and our Grindbone Challenge from Dragon Meat, two Dragon Meats ago, which was all combat. Beautifully short combat, as you say, but it was an hour of combat. But I don't, I subscribe to your APs, but they're always on the bottom of my list as something to actually listen to.
You can't be at the top of everyone's APs. Lists.
Well, one down from the top, let's be frank. So I'm not a major fan of APs. We do put out, between our episodes, we do put out actual play. But as I said, I don't invest enormous amounts of time in making it good. Mm. I simply edit the long pauses out of and mostly the Pringles, although I'm just driving myself wild editing a packet of Pringles out of our current Coriolis AP that seems to have got in there. I say seems to have got in there. I brought it into the bloody room. Fool. But I don't like APs generally, and I rarely listen to one all the way through. I might listen to an episode or two, but I don't generally listen to the end of the story, except with your cult ones, Andreas. And also before we started, when we were just testing the system out, you and I were talking about Legend of the Five Rings and a number of APs of different styles. One shot, I really don't like their format at all because it's very heavily produced. It's very sort of Chicago improv. I mean, it's great, I'm sure, for its audience, but I'm not its audience. But I've listened to their L5R all the way through. I've listened to Happy Jack's L5R. That was two massive campaigns that I listened to all the way through. And I think there's something there about that being a game where not so much the mechanics, but the setting require that the player characters discuss their motivations and their values and make a decision about what the right thing to do is when there is no right thing to do. Somebody's going to lose out with everything. That sort of discussion is what gets me going. So I guess, Cult does a little bit the same. Mm. It's about people describing their feelings rather than hitting people over there with a sword. Yeah. And I think maybe systems that encourage that rather than... Yeah. I mean, we're having a whale of a time playing Forbidden Lands, but I wonder how many people are enjoying listening to it. Mm.
It's interesting. Like our Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay podcast is... People are loving it. It's getting some of the biggest download numbers we have, but it's anytime there's a combat, it's like half of an entire episode.
Mm.
Two and a half hour episode is combat, and we're trying to do it quick.
Yeah.
I don't get it myself. Like if I was listening to it, I would struggle to listen to an hour combat in any in any actual play.
Yeah. Magnus
is actually in chat has said, he's just moved up somewhere.
He listens to Mud and Blood to learn.
He said we need a Woofrup hack of Year Zero, and interestingly, I have started on one. So
there you go.
I'm on it.
There you go.
I'm on it. Yeah. It will be released in 2028.
Yeah. And it's so interesting because, as I said, combat for me, it's the least most interesting thing for me to listen to when I listen to AP podcasts. And then we were starting Coriolis. I really wanted to get like kind of in medias res thing going. So I was like, yeah, the ship's under attack. And it wasn't until the episode was finished that I was like, how stupid can you get? I mean, you really dislike battles, and then you start the first episode of a long campaign with half an episode of space combat, which is even less interesting to listen to than ordinary combat. How are we ever going to get people to like stick through this battle until to get to the good parts? And then it's basically like the whole of the campaign is no combat whatsoever, more or less. So, like, guys, what's in store in the future for your podcast? What's the upcoming news? What's up next? And what's in the long run? Where do you want to go? What do you want to do?
I'll go last.
You'll go last.
So okay. Matthew, me, and then Matt, then, okay?
Okay. We've got an exciting new episode, which we're recording tomorrow, which is going to be looking at the future of Coriolis. We've also got... I'm really enjoying the current Coriolis AP campaign that's out there, apart from editing out the Pringles. And that, interestingly, you know, there've been two. I'm editing hour 8 of this at the moment, and we've had one combat in the first episode that was, with preparatory prayer, Matt, effectively one shot, stab in the eye. It was brilliant. It was, you know, the dice rolling was fabulous at the table, but it's great to listen to too. And then since then, it has been 7 hours of talking. I mean, my players procrastinate a lot. And I'm hoping that guys listening to it, there might be people on here who are listening to it, they go, God, I wish they'd bloody move on and actually do something. But they've been talking about what they've been doing for about 7 hours. So there's more of that to come, a couple more episodes of that. We've also got a new alien scenario that Dave has written and we've played, set in the UPP. So we had great fun playing socialists in the alien universe. Well, I wasn't a socialist, but you'll discover that. Spoilers! Don't listen to me. Don't. I'm a socialist. I'm a hard-bitten socialist. So that's coming up soon. And we've also got some more Forbidden Lands to do as well. And those are all APs. One of the exciting things, though, is this adventure, Song to the Siren, which my players have said is the best thing I've given them. We're going to write that up for the upcoming Free League workshop and publish that. And so I'm looking forward to putting that down on paper and other people being able to make their own take on it.
Well, Sweden Rolls, we are actually now, on Monday we will release the season finale of The Bitter Reach, the 8-episode mini campaign in The Bitter Reach. So the final will come on Monday, and after that we will finally move on to do a Mutant Year Zero game. So we have we recorded a few days ago only a Mutant Year Zero one shot with me, Anneli, Matthias, and the special guest. Actress from Stockholm, voice coach. She's Ingla Lund. Great. Like, she never played RPGs before, but she just went into it like this. It was fabulous. And then we're going to continue with Forbidden Lands, whether it's Bitter Reach or back to Ravenland. Not quite sure on that yet. I haven't written it yet. There will be some Alien for sure during 2020. And whether it's a one shot, it will probably be a one shot, but whether it's live on a convention.
You promised, Thomas.
Exactly. Whether it be live on a convention, we're talking to some conventions. We're going to try and go to some conventions and do some live shows. Cool. But more up on that later. So
you want to come to Dragon Meet? We had in our podcast zone, Dragon Meet are really friendly to podcasts.
Oh,
we
really?
Had loads of space this year. Good. You could have your own studio, as long as you bring your own equipment, that is. Or borrow mine or something. But come to Dragon Meet, do it there.
I just realized that UK Game Expo is the same weekend as Comic Con in London.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's a plan or so. Last weekend of May, isn't it? Both of them.
Is it the London Comic Con? Because I think there's a Birmingham.
Oh, sorry, Birmingham Comic Con, because UK Game Expo is in London. Sorry, I knew one was in Birmingham, one in London, but I
don't know whether it's planned, but they do coincide.
Yeah, they do, So a UK trip in May, I'm trying to work that out. Hoping for it. So that's basically what's... And me personally, I'm working on soundtracks for the Swedish version of Call of Cthulhu, for the official soundtrack to Vazen, and the official soundtrack to A Bitter Reach.
Excellent. Cool. Matt?
Well, my podcast, Mud and Blood, is finishing up.
He didn't say it, Liam. Don't worry, you're safe.
Shh, not Liam. Who's that?
Oh, sorry.
We're finishing up our Wolfrup campaign. Saying finishing up is going to go till May, or even longer. After that, we've started a cult. Actual play, which actually broke our podcast because we ended up doing two APs at once, as well as weekly content, and we nearly lost our relationships with our loved ones, and it was just bad all around. We were stressed out. We're missing our deadlines when we wanted to release stuff. So we've been recording a lot of cult, but our first two episodes were a flashback. So that worked quite nicely, where after the second episode, which we've just aired, we're going to take a break from it, and we'll do that one. We'll release that one after Wolfrup finishes. And generally, starting this year, we're slowing our pace down, so we're only going to be releasing a new episode at once a week. So alternating a discussion and an actual play episode every week. However, for my own kind of projects, I've got a lot of stuff happening this year, especially. I'm trying to get Nord Saga to a point where I can get it out and people can start playing it. So that's kind of one of my big pushes. Nord Saga, as I mentioned before, is an alternate setting for Forbidden Lands. I'm also trying to get my Year Zero Mini up to version 1.0, which is basically like a very, very rules light. It's like one page of rules, one page of GM advice, one page of character creation, and one page of how to tweak a setting. So it's like a 4-page mini game that uses the Year Zero system without any skills. So it's just attribute based, and takes a lot of cues from other like very rules light games that tend not to have skilled lists and things like that. So that, I want to get that to version 1.0. I want to spin off a lot of stuff based on that. Like I want to do a Year Zero kids game, which will use Lego figures and probably story dice as optional props. And official stuff, paid stuff in the pipeline as well, which I'm not sure I'm allowed to talk about. And I'm actually going to start doing live streaming and YouTube content for my own stuff. So I'm going to be running Forbidden Lands and Bitter Reach. Two separate campaigns starting next month is the plan. And I'll be doing it in a video format, mainly because I don't have the time to do any editing afterwards.
Matt, is that going to be on this channel that our listeners watching us
no,
on?
No, no, no. It'll be on my Nine Little Bees right. YouTube channel. So if people are interested in that, watching me run both the Ravenlands kind of core Forbidden Lands game and Bitter Reach, then check the description below. Find my Twitter or my website. You can sign up for a newsletter at my website. You can follow me on Twitter, and then when I come around to doing that, I'll be posting about it there, and it'll be a different YouTube channel. Anyway, so that's also like mainly because our podcast has been so all encompassing that I haven't actually run any campaigns for more than a year. It's just been really hard to kind of get in the GM seat other than running quick one shots for our Patreons and stuff. And I kind of miss that. I kind of feel like if I'm in a podcast where I'm giving GM advice, it'd be good if I was still actively GMing, right? I mean, I've GM'd a lot anyway, but still, like, I need to be working on those skills. And it's like, yeah, so I didn't want to do it through Mud and Blood. I wanted to have my freedom to do kind of whatever I wanted with kind of my own handpicked kind of crew of people. So that's why I'm doing it myself. So if that sounds interesting to people, then you can kind of check that out in the future. But this year for me is going to be the year of Forbidden Lands, really.
Okay, cool. Cool. Yeah. Okay, shall we do some questions from our listeners? Yeah. This first question, I don't know, but you said, Matthew, that you've had this ongoing discussion in the Effect podcast, so maybe we should do it like who's the best GM? I don't know if we've listened to each other enough to have an opinion on this at all. But since you had like an ongoing joke discussion on the effect about this.
With Dave.
Yeah.
So I would actually ask you two who you thought the best GM was out of me and Dave, but you haven't had to experience the terrible nature of Dave's playing or GMing, so I won't make you do that. I'm going to vote for you being best GM because you did come second in the AP podcast poll.
Yeah, I haven't listened enough to have an opinion. I'm sorry. I haven't because
loaded question.
Especially with Matthew, as you said, you just record your home games basically.
Yeah.
With Pringles and all. And that is a
we haven't the first one had the Pringles in. We've been off the Pringles ever since this upcoming episode. I'm so disappointed.
I personally prefer a bit more produced AP podcasts, so I mainly listen to the discussion podcasts from you guys.
Well, that's what we're here for, so that's okay. I don't mind that.
No, but Matt, that was just. What do we think about the actual play concept? What is it doing with a hobby as a whole? Let's see now. I have this feeling that we're living in a historic period. A new art form is manifesting. Never before has so many people been recording and so many listening. Is this from Jon, maybe, I think?
How much time have we got?
We have got...
That's a pretty deep...
We've got 20 minutes top.
20 minutes, max.
That's a deep question.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I guess for me, yes, it's changed. Things are changing. Oh. And some people like it, some people don't.
Yeah,
sure. We're all in the podcast game, so for us, it's kind of a cool thing to be a part of. But yeah, I've seen and been involved in a lot of conversations where people don't kind of...
Whether you like it or not... It's a golden age of gaming, and it's been brought about mostly, I think, by things like Critical Role, by podcasts like this, by, frankly, whatever you like, you can find it. There's some niche out there where somebody's doing the podcast or the YouTube stream that matches what you want. Yeah. You know, I'm not a fan of D&D. I'm not a fan of Critical Role. But, you know, I can find stuff I like, and anybody can. Mm. And I think it's transformed the world of gaming. I think absolutely.
I mean, there's no discussion the impact that AP Podcast has had on like really making this the new golden age of role playing games. It's really, I mean, you as you said, Matthew, think what you like about it, but it's a fact. It is a fact. I mean, the Critical Role effect is a thing. I mean, in Sweden only, we have thousands of new players. Unfortunately, only playing D&D. But we do have thousands of new players because of Critical Role only. And that's, I mean, just that says it all. But I think because I know Jon has been discussing this a few times, and I think what he's after is AP podcasting something that is changing how RPGs are being written, and I'm not sure that they actually are that much, because many scenarios are still written with maps of houses, and there are 8 rooms in this house, and in this room there's that, in this room there's that, and that's something that
you are finding
that's not interesting. That's not entertaining in an AP podcast format, for me at least.
It is an actual play video-based one. So if you're doing Roll20 or something and you've got those assets, and that's the thing that we are seeing is that lots of people are producing those maps as, you know, virtual tabletop friendly files and things. So certainly as far as virtual tabletop gaming is concerned, I think we definitely are seeing a shift towards support for that. I wouldn't necessarily say that the design of games has really like noticeably shifted to do that, but we're in the middle of it, so maybe it has and we just haven't been able to see it.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, certainly like support for virtual tabletop gaming is certainly a big thing now. I mean, look at Free League. They paid to have an official Simbaroom Fantasy Grounds whatever it's called, plugin or whatever. So, you know, I've had conversations with Tomas and other people in the past in Free League and asked, like, are we going to see some more virtual tabletop support? And because in Sweden, it's not a big thing. Online gaming is not a very big thing. They don't, you know, Tomas has said, like, we haven't really seen a big need for it. If people want to see it, they need to tell us that they want it so that we can start focusing on it. And that's only very, very slowly started to be seen. So I think it depending on who's asking this question, in places like the US and the UK, or English-speaking parts of the world, it is a much bigger deal and it's a much bigger focus. Yeah. And of course, a lot of the big gaming publishers are coming out of... Well, of course, I'm going to say that because I'm only reading English games. But, you know, in terms of market share, you know, Wizards of the Coast and Chaosium, they have, and Modiphius now, you know, they are the big players, and there's a lot of support now for their games in on virtual tabletop. So
I think one reason for online gaming TTRPGs in Sweden isn't a big deal. A big thing is that it's we have the most RPG players per capita in the world. So it's not that hard to find a game like IRL game in Sweden as it is in other places. I think that's one reason for it, actually.
Sure. Yeah. And that's cool. Like I'm really jealous. I live in the countryside in Germany. My German isn't fluent, so I have tried playing two. This is actually another one of the questions was about playing in other games other than your native language.
Let's jump to that because we were basically done with this. Good segue, Matt. Great.
I've not run anything in German. My wife is German. I've moved to Germany because of family reasons, and I speak like an intermediate level of German, which is all well and good. I can have a conversation with anybody here, as long as it's not about things that have, you know, specialist vocabulary.
Yeah.
And my God. Role-playing games have a very, very specialist vocabulary. And I, like, sitting in somebody's like, flat, listening to them for 3 hours describing in great detail a setting, Simbrium was one, and, like, they were going into great detail about the setting. I was like, I don't understand 10% of the stuff coming out of your mouth right now. Pwah. And, like, having to sit there for 3 hours, like, trying to keep up, it was torture. And then I got dragged into, I kind of got convinced to play in a Das Schwarze Auge game, which actually probably is the worst game I've ever experienced. And that was exactly the same. It was a little bit better, maybe, but it's hard. Mm. I guess it helps if you're fluent or if you're a really high level of knowledge in a language, but my experiences have not been great.
I have to say, speaking as a son of Empire, who whose idea of speaking to foreigners is just talk slowly and loudly, I am so impressed by the number of gamers around the world who are learning English through things like, you know, we've had people saying they're learning English listening to our podcast. And, you know, as you say, all those technical terms, we've just started trying to put our podcast up on YouTube simply so we can take advantage of the YouTube automatic
subtitles.
Yeah, we've had some requests for
YouTube
that as well.
Really struggles with some of the words we're using. Mm. And so I really admire everybody, the Swedes, the Germans, the Dutch, all those people who are, even as we speak, struggling to learn Alien in English because that's the only way they're going to get to play the game. So kudos to everybody around the world for whom English is your second language, for everything you do in terms of joining us on the forums and the community in general.
Yeah.
Mm. I think the question was asked also in the angle of, like, the question was, you all like Swedish role-playing games and they're mostly leaning to lighter rules compared to standard, that is D&D. What is the appeal of the Swedish RPGs from a non-Swede point of view? So I'll leave that to you.
Yeah, I don't know whether there's anything that I've thought is particularly Swedish. I mean, you know, Coriolis was my first Swedish RPG. Mm. I haven't looked at anything else like Trudvang Chronicles. I've kickstarted Western, but, you know, that's going to take a little while to deliver.
Apologies.
I'm probably going to go for Helmgast's Troubleshooters. But, you know, that's interesting. That's a Swedish game that's got a very Belgian aesthetic, so I'm not sure whether I'm going to get that being particularly Swedish. Mm. It doesn't strike me that there's a Swedish style, like in LARP. Mm. One very quickly learned of Nordic LARP, and I think there probably is a Swedish style to, or a Nordic style to live action role play. But in these rule sets, I don't particularly see them being particularly Swedish.
No, because the the Drakar & Demoner, which was the big game in the 80s, which outsold every other game except D&D in the 80s, that was based on the Chaosium BRP.
Runequest.
Yeah. So, and I mean, we can't claim that to be Swedish, of course.
Yeah.
It's just that they after a while, after a version or two, they swapped it from being D100 to being D20, but mm-hmm. the reverse from D&D. So you wanted to roll low instead of high, you know.
Yeah, yep. Like Chaosium's Pendragon's the same though with the D20.
Okay, so okay.
Don't know which of those came first.
Okay.
I agree with Matthew. I like a lot of the games coming out of Sweden, but I don't necessarily see a correlation that I could say like this element is what makes up a Swedish RPG. I don't like D&D. I strongly dislike D&D, mainly because I've played more of it than any other game. My home group, when I got back into role-playing, was a D&D group, and we played 4th edition when I joined it. It was the new hot thing. I hated every minute of it, but I really loved my group. I loved the people. We became really good friends. And then when 5th edition came out, I was starting to, that was kind of around the time, when we moved to 5th edition, it was kind of roughly around the time that Mutant Year Zero came out. And that's when I started thinking like, okay, here's some other games out there. We needed like trying to break my group away from D&D. So for me, there's a lot of baggage there. I'm not a big fan of it. And the Swedish games that we've been seeing have just great rules that aren't, you know, married to the D&D, the D20. We don't necessarily see classes like we do in D&D. The combat is a little bit, kind of feels maybe a little bit like it's borrowing from the kind of more traditional rule sets and stuff, but that's kind of it. So I like lots of other games too that aren't, that aren't Swedish. So like Delta Green, one of my top, probably my top three games is Delta Green, which is absolutely excellent. Probably the best horror game I've ever run or played. And I haven't done much of it. I would love to do more. That's an American game based on like a streamlined Call of Cthulhu, but it's excellent.
I was thinking maybe one more question before we take a question from the live audience, and this is maybe a too big of a question, but we can try because I don't have much opinions on this. Maybe you guys have. I know Matt has, but we should do at least one question from the Discord Year Zero as well. So I'm thinking about the third, the first one about the open game license, what that can mean for both new games and current content for current games.
Actually, we can put a link to the OGL maybe, because having spoken to Tomas about this, they were okay with the OGL being shared, like when on our podcast and things when we're talking about it, because you know it's limited distribution, but they're not going to be releasing it themselves until. I guess all the boxes are ticked. Okay. So we'll put a link to where you can see the OGL. It's finished, it's written, it's in Google Drive as a document, and people can create their own content for it. The marketplace on DriveThruRPG is coming very, very soon. I hadn't heard the 6th of February date, but that sounds probably about right. It's coming, and there are people already creating stuff. I've created stuff with it. Other people, especially on the Discord, there's a lot of chatter going on with people who are working on projects for it. So I'm really excited to see what's coming out of it. The question is, you know, what can it mean for both new games and content for current games? We're already seeing a lot of people talking about creating content for older games. I've got, for example, a phrase book for Coriolis, which I'd like to put out for that, which, you know, is a kind of a one-page list of terms, also based on my experiences of living out in Pakistan with trying to insert some realistic kind of Arabic-based languages or Persian-based languages.
That would be great.
Easy for a Western tongue to kind of get their mouth around. Because what I first saw was somebody created a glossary and they were using Arabic words exactly from Arabic. And, you know, they're doing like a direct translation. This is the Arabic word and this is the English word. It's like, yeah, but that's really hard to say for an English speaker. I can say it because I can speak the languages, but I also know that that's, you know, not easy. So for me, it was kind of like, let's look at some other terms that kind of mean the same thing, but are easier to pronounce. Let's turn it into a pidgin language. So let's mash like Hindi and Farsi and Arabic and Urdu and all these languages and mash them together, pick the word that sounds the best to, like, is easiest to say from a Western mouth.
Okay, so you
which
picked, like, okay, this one we picked
is kind
Urdu
of,
and this
you could say that's
there.
Appropriation a little bit, maybe, but really, I'm just thinking about, like, you know, making it easier. I, like, to me, when I hear people speaking Arabic, like, you know, like an English mouth speaking Arabic, when they're just reading the word, it, like, makes me cringe because I know how it should be said. But I also speak a few languages, so it's maybe I'm a little bit snobbish about it. But that was my big point, was like I wanted to create this thing. Anyway, I'm really plugging my thing.
Yeah. I love your list, though.
You put that
before on the forums, and I've downloaded it. We don't actually feature it much in Coriolis because I always forget to share it with my players, but I'd like to do that. It's like Belter on in The Expanse. And I'd love to fit it in there.
What are your thoughts about?
But
the,
yeah, I think that the point is that there's lots of people creating little things like this, and we'll see probably some free stuff coming out. We'll see some paid stuff coming out. I've heard people making new Starship designs for Alien, for example. So there's just like, I think we're gonna see as soon as it goes live. I'm hoping we're gonna see instantly a bunch of new stuff. You know, over at DriveThruRPG, and hopefully that will continue to kind of.
Just one extra caveat. Sorry, Andreas. I'm not sure that Alien is going to be included in the Free League Workshop storefront.
That was just somebody in Discord saying that they'd created something and they wanted it to be there. So maybe it won't happen.
I think that might not.
Yeah, it did just strike me when I said it as well that there might be licensing issues.
Do you
have
any opinions on the OGL, Matthew?
It's a good thing. It was my idea. I just want to get that home to everybody across here. When the first Free League Kickstarter was going on and, you know, they'd gone through their first load of stretch goals, I was the one that said, how about an OGL? And I've got the proof, photographic proof, if you want to see it.
I believe you.
So it's my idea.
I believe you.
I get all the credit, guys. I want, you know.
But none of the money.
But yeah, well, 10% of 10% cut of everything you produce, Matt, obviously. But
really?
So I'm all for it. It doesn't, you know, and, you know, as I mentioned before, Dave and I are working on a Western game. You know, I'm not going to make my fortune doing a Western game in which is a genre not everybody likes to play, and I haven't even got monsters in it, and it's in a, you know, it's in the system, but it's, we could just see how this system could turn itself into that, and I wanted to give it a go. We'll play it around our table. I hope a few other people play it as well, but I think the real bonus will be in fan produced content, and you know, it's important that the, you know, the history of Coriolis has been about fan-produced content. That Free League themselves started off as fan creators before professionalizing. Chaosium has just released the Johnstown Compendium, which is their version for RuneQuest content, and there's some really good stuff on there because there have been fans that have been producing this for 40 years. And so I'd really like to see that sort of stuff happen. You know, semi-pro, really talented creators producing great stuff that the main companies haven't got the time to do. So I'm all for it.
Great. Matt, we do have time for one or two live viewer questions, don't we?
Yeah, let me just quickly say, somebody was asking if we could share the link for that OGL. If people are watching this after the event, which I guess a lot of people will be, I've just put a link to it in the chat, so that should be somewhere on the side while you're watching this. Anyway, if you want to go visit that, anyway,
great.
I'm looking at the chat right now. If anybody in chat, if you have any questions that you want us to have a quick chat about, we've got a few minutes still before we hit our 1.5 hour
3 minutes,
our 1.5 hour hard target, and I'm going to be hitting the end stream button exactly on the one I won't. On
I
one
think
hour,
we can do
93
minutes,
minutes
if we find an interesting question. I mean, we don't have.
We have 6 minutes then. So we've got one that's come up very quickly from Jens Greyhead. I'm not sure how you pronounce that. Sorry, there's an A with a circle above it.
Grod. Grohed.
What's the lowest common denominator, in your opinion, for the Year Zero rules?
I'm struggling to understand quite what Jens means, but I think, if you like, the thing that makes Year Zero, and is a common denominator but also a differentiator, is the push mechanic. So everything relies on pushing dice, and what's different is the cost. So that's what I'm saying. hopefully that's the answer that Jens was looking for.
And the attribute skill dice pool, those two would for me be the, like, without any of those, it wouldn't feel like a Year Zero engine game. But as that, those two are the only things you need. Apart from that, you can do whatever you want. It will still feel like a Year Zero engine game.
For me, the big thing is, because you get push mechanics in other games, you get attributes plus skills equaling a dice pool. For example, the Genesis Rebirth. Another game, Shadowrun, does the same thing. For me, it's the D6 dice pool that... sixes equal success, and you don't need anything else. There aren't target numbers where you're rolling a 4, 5, or six, and you need a target number. For me, that's the big thing about Year Zero. You only need a single six on that dice, and that means I can play a modified version of the Year Zero engine that does or doesn't have a push mechanic with my 4-year-old son, because he knows that rolling a six on a dice is a good thing, and everything else is kind of gravy. He'll have attributes with like strong, fast, clever, and friendly or something, and numbers assigned to them. That's how many dice you pick up, and you just need a six to succeed. And for me, the push mechanic is definitely core to it. There's a whole, like, we could probably come up with a list of like 4 or 5 things core to the Year Zero system that if you don't have them, it's arguably not Year Zero.
Like rolling a one on a push roll as well. Like you can,
but that's not a thing in Coriolis. That's not a thing in Tales from the Loop.
No, of course.
So that's,
of course,
that rolling a one is only in Forbidden Lands and Mutant Year Zero.
Yeah, you're right.
So it really is like in all the games, it's a six. You need a six to succeed.
I'm quite proud. It took 90 minutes for you guys to, like, I was thinking it'll take 5 minutes until I get a slap on the wrist by you guys. Like, no, that's not how that works. I almost made it through the entire episode because I'm not the rules expert at all. You guys know so much more about the rules than I do. It's I almost made it.
That's because we're Capricorns.
Do we have time? We could do one more, can't we? Did we get one more?
Anyway. It's 10 o'clock. It's gone 10 o'clock. It's a minute past 10. Okay,
I want to reward the live viewers. One more. One last one.
I'm just looking. Matthew, when's the next TOTOW packet? TOTOW.
So that is Tales of the Old West. And our high-ranking patrons are getting a regular package. And to be honest, Andy, I can see that's you that say that. You'll know that we've been producing a whole bunch of alien stuff, so Toto's had to take a bit of a back seat. Dave is playtesting alien stuff now rather than Tales of the Old West. So we will get back to it. Some stuff needs to be written up, but there will be a new one quite soon.
Great.
Any other questions? This now's your last chance. Something quick?
Yeah, we have 50
we'll
seconds.
We'll give it a pause because there's like a 5 to 10 second delay.
We are meant to sing to you, Andreas. Somebody said, has anybody sung to Andreas yet?
They were asking if they'd sung to me. Because yesterday was my birthday.
Oh, your birthday.
But I was saying, but it was your birthday the day before mine. So Andreas should really sing to both of us.
Yeah.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday.
Right. Magnusita asks, when is the next round table?
Oh, that's a good question. That's a good question.
I think this has gone quite well. So I think, are we saying there is going to be another one? Because this was just an experiment for us.
Yeah, we didn't know that was going to be. This is going to be a one-time thing. But I've had a lot of fun. And
well,
I
did put number one in YouTube. I put Year Zero Roundtable number one. So I was already thinking, there's going to be more.
Yeah,
than
we
one.
Got more than one listener that actually just when I asked for questions, they were like, "Less talk, more play." They thought we should do an AP, but. I don't know. Maybe this is what we do best, us three.
I was thinking we could potentially do like once a quarter, once a month, something like that. This is just like a little extra thing. The overlay, the graphical bits that everyone's seeing here, that's all set up. I can run that again really quickly. So there's no editing for this really afterwards. So compared to a podcast, like the podcast that we all run, this is really low maintenance. But we're all busy. We're all doing other stuff. So we'll have a talk about it behind the scenes and talk about like when we can.
But it sounds like we can promise that there will be at least one more round table.
Yeah. Sure. And we have talked about actually running a game, but like a kind of cross podcast game, but I'm not sure. Yeah. I'm not sure whether like one of us would have to, you know, commit to the time to run one. I can't do that. I did talk about it initially, but I thought about it realistically afterwards. I don't think that's going to happen.
Maybe in the future. Never say never, maybe, but this will probably be a round table for now. Right. Yeah.
I'd like to say we're not going to do it until I've finished my bloody PhD, which I should have finished last year. But
So
yeah, that sounds a bit more.
Having
important.
Said that, maybe it's time to wrap it up and say thank you to all the viewers who watched us live, and thank you to upcoming podcast listeners and upcoming YouTube viewers. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you all for joining us, and we'll be back.
We will. Keep praying to the icons.
Sometime.
Push that roll.
Oh, it's my shirt. My shirt says that very thing.
that was a setup. All right, thanks for listening, everyone. And if you want to get in touch with us, check the description for links for Twitter and websites and stuff. And we'll hopefully see your messages and get back to you. Cheers. Bye. Catch you next time.
You have been listening to The Effect Podcast, presented by Fiction Suit and the RPG Gods. Music, Stars on a Black Sea, used with permission of Free League Publishing.